I find something here in the 18th and 19th chapter. I hope to God I can get through it. I find that there is a very special message here. And a special message is primarily aimed at the high priest. So I need a reader. And I'd like that reader to read both chapter 18 and 19 of Numbers.
Then the Lord said to Aaron, "You and your sons and your father's house with you shall bear the iniquity related to the sanctuary, and you and your sons with you shall bear the iniquity associated with your priesthood. Also bring with you your brethren of the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, that they may be joined with you and serve you while you and your sons are with you before the tabernacle of witness. They shall attend to your needs and all the needs of the tabernacle, but they shall not come near the articles of the sanctuary and the altar, lest they die, they and you also. They shall be joined with you and attend to the needs of the tabernacle of meeting for all the work of the tabernacle, but an outsider shall not come near you. And you shall attend to the duties of the sanctuary and the duties of the altar, that there may be no more wrath on the children of Israel. Behold, I myself have taken your brethren, the Levites, from among the children of Israel. They are a gift to you, given by the Lord, to do the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Therefore you and your sons with you shall attend to your priesthood for everything at the altar and behind the veil, and you shall serve. I give your priesthood to you as a gift for service, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death." And the Lord spoke to Aaron, "Here, I myself have also given you charge of my heave offerings, all the holy gifts of the children of Israel. I have given them as a portion to you and your sons as an ordinance forever. This shall be yours of the most holy things reserved from the fire, every offering of theirs, every grain offering, and every sin offering, and every trespass offering which they render to me, shall be most holy for you and your sons. In a most holy place you shall eat it, every male shall eat it, it shall be holy to you. This also is yours, the heave offering of their gift, with all the wave offerings of the children of Israel. I have given them to you and your sons and daughters with you as an ordinance forever. Everyone who is clean in your house may eat it. All the best of the oil, all the best of the new wine and the grain, their first fruits, which they offer to the Lord, I have given them to you. Whatever first ripe fruit is in their land, which they bring to the Lord, shall be yours. Everyone who is clean in your home may eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. Everything that first opens the womb of all flesh, which they bring to the Lord, whether man or beast, shall be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall surely redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. And those redeemed of the devoted things you shall redeem, which 1 month old, when 1 month old, according to your valuation, for 5 shekels of silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. But the firstborn of a cow, the firstborn of a sheep, or the firstborn of a goat, you shall not redeem. They are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar and burn their fat as an offering made by fire for a sweet aroma to the Lord. And their flesh shall be yours, just as the wave breast and the right thigh are yours. All the heave offering of the holy things which the children of Israel offer to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and daughters with you as an inheritance forever. It is a covenant of salt forever before the Lord with you and your descendants with you. Then the Lord said to Aaron, "You shall have no inheritance in their land, nor shall you have any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the children of Israel. Behold, I have given the children of Levi all the tithes in Israel as an inheritance in return for the work which they perform, the work of the tabernacle of meeting. Hereafter the children of Israel shall not come near the tabernacle of meeting, lest they bear sin and die. But the Levites shall perform the work of the tabernacle of meeting, and they shall bear in their iniquity. It shall be a statute forever, throughout your generations, that among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithes of the children of Israel, which they offer up as a heave offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites as an inheritance. Therefore I have said to them, among the children of Israel they shall have no inheritance. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak thus to the Levites, and say to them, when you take from the children of Israel the tithes which I have given you from them as your inheritance, then you shall offer up a heave offering of it to the Lord, a tenth of the tithe. And your heave offering shall be reckoned to you as though it were the grain of the threshing floor, and as the fullness of the winepress. Thus you shall also offer a heave offering to the Lord from all your tithes, which you receive from the children of Israel, and you shall give the Lord's heave offering from it to Aaron the priest. Of all your gifts you shall offer up every heave offering due to the Lord, from all the best of them, the consecrated part of them. Therefore you shall say to them, when you have lifted up the best of it, then the rest shall be accounted to the Levites as the produce of the threshing floor, and as the produce of the wine press. You may eat it in any place, you and your households, for it is your reward for your work in the tabernacle of meeting, and you shall bear no sin because of it, when you have lifted up the best of it, but you shall not profane the holy gifts of the children of Israel, lest you die. Now the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, this is the ordinance of the law which the Lord has commanded, saying, speak to the children of Israel, that they bring you a red heifer without blemish, in which there is no defect, and on which a yoke has never come. You shall give it to Eleazar the priest, that he may take it outside the camp, and it shall be slaughtered before him. And Eleazar the priest shall take some of its blood with his finger, and sprinkle some of its blood seven times directly in front of the tabernacle of meeting. Then the heifer shall be burned in his sight, its hide, its flesh, its blood, and its offal shall be burned. And the priest shall take cedar wood, and hyssop, and scarlet, and cast them into the midst of the fire, burning the heifer. Then the priest shall wash his clothes, he shall bathe in water, and afterward he shall come into the camp. The priest shall be unclean until evening. And the one who burns it shall wash his clothes in water, bathe in water, and shall be unclean until evening. Then a man who is clean shall gather up the ashes of the heifer, and store them outside the camp in a clean place. And they shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel, for the water of purification. It is for purifying from sin. And the one who gathers the ashes of the heifer shall wash his clothes and be unclean until evening. And it shall be a statute forever to the children of Israel and to the stranger who dwells among them. He who touches the dead body of any one shall be unclean 7 days. He shall purify himself with water on the third day and on the seventh day. Then he will be clean. But if he does not purify himself on the third day and on the seventh day, he will not be clean. Whoever touches the body of anyone who has died and does not purify himself defiles the tabernacle of the Lord. That person shall be cut off from Israel. He shall be unclean because the water of purification was not sprinkled on him. His uncleanness is still on him. This is the law where a man dies in a tent. All who come into the tent and all who are in the tent shall be unclean 7 days. And every one and every open vessel which has no cover fastened on it is unclean. Whoever in the open field touches one who is slain by a sword or who has died, or a bone of a man or a grave shall be unclean 7 days. And for an unclean person, they shall take some of the ashes of the heifer, burnt for purification from sin, and running water shall be put on them in a vessel. A clean person shall take hyssop and dip it in the water, sprinkle it on the tent, on all the vessels, on the persons who were there, or on the one who touched a bone, the slain, the dead, or a grave. The clean person shall sprinkle the unclean on the third day and on the seventh day. And on the seventh day he shall purify himself, wash his clothes, and bathe in water, and at evening he shall be clean. But the man who is unclean and does not purify himself, that person shall be cut off from among the assembly, because he has defiled the sanctuary of the Lord. The water of purification has not been sprinkled on him. He is unclean. It shall be a perpetual statute for them. He who sprinkles the water of purification shall wash his clothes, and he who touches the water of purification shall be unclean until evening. Whatever the unclean person touches shall be unclean, and the person who touches it shall be unclean until evening.
Tammy, I want you to do me a favor. If you can do this, on the 19th chapter, in verse 13, I've got the old King James Version here, and he read it as purification. Could you find out what that Hebrew word is and what that means? Can you do that for me? Okay. You already have it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay. Well, the verse, my version says, 19 verse 13, anyone who touches a corpse, the body of a man who has died and does not purify himself, defiles the tabernacle of the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from Israel, because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him.
Okay, water poured.
He shall be unclean. His uncleanness is still upon him.
That's what
and
I
so
wanted.
It looks like there's two different words for impurity here, though, so I don't know which one you're looking for, because in the first part of that verse where it says, but the anyone who touches a corpse, a body of a man who has died and does not purify himself, defiles the tabernacle. That word for purified is chata. And then later on where it
chata,
says...
right.
Later on it says, because the water for impurity was not sprinkled on him. And that word is nida.
Nida?
For the impurity. So it's...
One's purity, one's impurity. So it is a good translation. That's what I wanted to find out. I didn't look that up. I meant to do that. And his translation uses the word purification, which is a better translation. Some of you have the old King James. So I put a note down there and I said, that's not the right word here for called separation. Though it is a separation from being clean and unclean. It is a math. It's a way of, you can use that old English and knowing that phrase. We'll get to that in a minute. I just want to have her look that up for me. All right. Now, it's funny because this morning I was thinking, okay, 19th and 18th, 19th, pretty short. I think I'll run through it and we'll work on the 20th chapter. Well, I spent more hours on the 18th chapter than I ever planned. And I found very fascinating things when I look into the things and find myself, well, that's an interesting way of looking at things, So I learned just along with you people. I learned things and... I also learned from you what you have understood, and clarify sometimes the things. I wanted just to clarify a couple of things that we can kind of understand. In his translation, one of your King James translations uses to diminish the word called heave offering quite a bit. And so in his translation sometimes, he comes out and he says, the raised one. Okay, and that's what that word really means. And we'll talk about that. When you talk about the heave offering, you talk about the one has been raised up before God. So it's not just, in any kind of, it's not an offering of, it could be any offering, whether it's a free will one or one that is required. But in the particular case here, it's an offering here that the children of Israel want to bring. And winds up being what's called a gift. In the book of Hebrews, remember, this is one of the functions of the priest, was to give what the people give as a gift unto God. The priesthood, must give it unto God, because that's what they're really giving it to. And of course, in these chapters, we find out where God now has it. What does he do with it? Well, he gives it away. He gives it away to a very important priesthood. But that word, we use the word bear, which is kind of a hard word in English. But it really means to lift up, to bury, or to carry, or to take something from them. So you take it. One thing it says here in the first, he says the inequities. So you are to take and you carry and you bear and you're supposed to take it on. And at the same time, what does that iniquity mean? Well, it means exactly what you think it means. In a simple way, it's that they take on the guilty person's perversity. They take it on themselves. Now, that doesn't sound logical in human thinking, right? However, the high priest represents whom? Represents the Messiah. He takes it on. He carries it. He takes it on. And what did he do with it? Well, when he took it on, it cost him. What did it cost him? His life. So when we see in here, although it seems like that's weird, why you do this? Why would the high priest have to do this? It's a picture of course, the function of the Messiah. And so when we read these things, we have to kind of put it into, although they, how they handled it, I do not know, except they tell you what they do with it. All right? They do certain things with it. Which doesn't, to our mind, because we are so human, we can't picture doing something that's physical that represents anything that makes sense to our brain and our thinking. But God didn't write the Torah or have it written in order for us to picture what, well, in a sense, even the Israelites did not understand, and even Moses probably did not understand the whole purpose of everything. Because remember what Yahshua said to his disciples? There are prophets who have died longing to know and understand what you now know and understand. So we're coming to, I believe, this is Richard's opinion, at the end of a period, don't know how long the period is, where God is increasing understanding. Now, on that old thing up there, he says, those who do not try to understand. We are at the threshold of that. We are desiring to understand Devarim Elohim. And it takes, you know, work. It takes time. It takes energy. And it takes a point of dedication and commitment and fortitude to be able to keep on looking and looking and looking. When I research these words, I try to find out and what it means and how the picture of it, what it shows. Because most people, my opinion now, most people who quickly read the Torah section of the Tanakh, they rapidly go through 7, 8, 9 chapters rapidly every week. So they go back and they get, but they never really, my personal opinion, never really look into and say, what does it say? And generally a rabbi can pick a section out of that, and Jeremiah's already chosen section that he doesn't really choose. It's already been chosen by the hierarchy of you will pick this section of those five chapters and talk about that. Don't go beyond high or low, beyond it. And you're not allowed to, quote, have any commentary. No statement. You cannot explain what it means. You just read it, period, point blank. And wow, that's interesting. Because it only belongs to the higher, I don't know what the rank of the highest priest rabbi is, but they're the only ones allowed to do that, in Orthodox especially. But we went to a conservative one, and they're not allowed to do that either. Anyway, so what did the high priest does? He does something. He takes on something. This is the beginning, the very first statement. Now, he's addressing whom? Aaron. Not addressing Moses at all. I find that very fascinating. Anybody had a comment?
Mine says, you shall bear the iniquity of you and your sons. The priesthood should bear the iniquity of the sanctuary and the iniquity
of the priesthood. We'll talk about that, yes. He must take it all.
But
because
the
sanctuary
people.
Of God became polluted. It became polluted.
Okay.
He says it became polluted. How do you clean it up? When you have this thing, is I'm going to come and clean up my temple first. Why? If it's already pure, why clean it up? Because it's got polluted. Who polluted it? Well, We know the priesthood of and by itself polluted the offerings, polluted the things. Because I can't remember which section we know about Elijah and his and Eli rather and his sons. We also know about even the Samuel's sons polluted it, and it was quite common to do that because they didn't, you know, didn't matter to them. But I want to go back here just a little bit about this thing about iniquity. I find it very fascinating. I want you to go to Leviticus 26 chapter and verse 41. And what I also have walked, they, and which I also have walked contrary unto them, the Yahuwah is talking here, and have brought them into the land of their enemies, and if their uncircumcised heart be humbled, and they then accept, and you have this word in Old English, the punishment of their iniquity. Now that whole phrase, punishment of their iniquity, is only one word in Hebrew. It's not the whole statement. And they will have to accept what? The iniquity. Oh, what happens when you really and truly accept the iniquity that you have done? Guilt. Now, it's not punishment. It's guilt. However, play on words, what happens when you do accept it? You have to accept what? The consequences. So you do have to accept the punishment. All right? Now, remember the function of the high priest is to do what? To bear it, to carry it, to handle it, to do something about it. If you were a human being, how would you do that? It's literally impossible, isn't it? So we're looking here a definitely prophetic prophecy here. And what Jesus said, when you look at the law, it talks about whom? Me. And when you see the functions that are required the high priest to do, he's telling you, that's talking about me, not them. All right, you understand what I'm saying? That's not too hard to figure out, right? And of course, we have the tabernacle, the wilderness, and he's got this one, his translation on the, in verse 8. It says, the tabernacle of the congregation. You know what that word is in Hebrew? It's not congregation at all. His translation turned it to what's called the meeting. Okay? But at the tabernacle, there is the meeting. You know what that word is in Hebrew? Moed. That's all that word means. And Moed does not mean just Moed of time. It means Moed of place. All right? And a moed of a thing. Time, place of where what it happens is. It's a meeting place, it's a time, does involve time. Moed always involves time. And you have the tabernacle of the moed, there is a timing that takes place. Something happens in there, and it's at an appointed time that the priest is to do certain things. They do certain things on every Shabbat, right? And they do certain things in every new moon. They do certain things, and where do they do it at? The tabernacle, or what's called the sanctuary. We'll talk about sanctuary in a minute. Sanctuary, the word sanctuary is a noun, and it does mean what you think it means, but it has from the word kodesh, and it's called koded, kodesh, not kodosh, but koded. I mean, that's the noun word for the verb meaning a place that is holy, or holiness unto the Lord. Now, so just when you read these things, you'll know. And then down to verse 18, another statement now comes on. That was completed all the way to verse 7, verse 8. Now, guess who? Yahweh is now talking unto whom? Again, Aaron. So when you hear these words that God speaks to Aaron, pay close attention because really he's speaking unto the Messiah. And so he said, okay, this is the function. This is the duty. And only the Messiah can do this, including the place going into the Holy of Holies. Now the man, Moses, and the men after him, could not go into the Holy of Holies. In the book of Hebrews, what do you find out? He went in. Right? He broke the veil. Tore that barrier, that veil which means the broken one. Hebrew means the broken one. And so he has this thing called a heave offering. We're explaining about a heave offering comes from the verb that is to lift up or to rise. Verse 10, I want to clarify this in Hebrew because some of your translations have even read it that way. It's not in Hebrew. And I'll read it as it says here about eating food. In the most holy or the Kodesh Kodeshim place you shall eat it. No, that place is not there. All it says is that Kodesh Kodeshim you shall eat. Okay, that different. Because they couldn't take that and take it into the holy place. They can't do that. It's against the law. Right? So it's just really plain in Hebrew. It means Kodesh Kodeshim you eat. That's all it says in Hebrew. Doesn't say a place. Doesn't say that a location. It's very plain. And it says, every male shall eat of it, shall be holy unto thee. And it has to do with the males in this particular place, not the females. Not the women or the children. Okay, we talk about the clean and the unclean. In verse 12, rather, he says, the best of the oil and the best of the wine, which has been given to Levites, will be given unto the high priest. And he says, and no one can take of it. Verse 13, I think, very, very interesting. He says, latter part of it, everyone that is clean in thy household shall eat of it. So if you are not Tohor, if you're Tomei, you can't eat it. You're not allowed to partake of it. Okay, quickly drop down to verse 25. Now another statement comes in, and now he's not addressing Abraham. I mean, not addressing Aaron. Now he's addressing Moses. So we have 2 points here with addressing Aaron. Now we have one of addressing Moses, and of course, the issue there, Moses, is about the Levites that were not priests. What were they supposed to do? And they were to take the tithe of the children. Now, we talk about the tithe, right? 10%, right? Who's it belong to? Belongs to the Levites. Does not belong to the priesthood. It belongs to the Levites. That's who you give. They then would give their tithes of wine and corn and all the first fruits. Everything that was God tells to give, you will give to the Levites. Now, what were the Levites required to do? They were to take the best. Not the first or the last, but the best of the bunch. So, quote, if you had the tenth animal you had, and it was lame, you have to give it no matter what. Well, that belongs to Levites. Now, what if the Levites have? Okay. And they don't count the rod, the tenth one, as that belongs to Aaron. No, they had to pick out of the first ten. Okay, which one's the best of the whole bunch? Now, they're the ones that get to pick the best and give it unto whom? And who is Aaron representing? Okay, now, when we think about this, you're giving, quote, tithe. Let's say you're Levites, spiritually speaking, and people give you things. You're supposed to give the best unto Yahshua. You don't keep anything back. And we know from history, and Daniel will go through that perhaps way in the future, where the Levites didn't give the best. And when the priesthood took it, they went out and got what they wanted. whether or not it was allowed by law or not. They would have just took it. That's not against the law. And so every time you raise this word, heave offering, it's the raised offering, the offering that's been raised up unto God, to be given unto God, and God turns around and gives that offering, whether it's a tithe or the first fruit of the land or any other, or the wine goes to the Levites, and the best wine goes to the priesthood. So be kind of cool what it would taste like, you know. So here, remember, what did the Messiah do at the wedding? Produce the best. Wow. Here the high, spiritually speaking, right? The high priest, what did he do with the best of the wine? Gave it unto a very specific occasion. What was the occasion? A wedding. And he gave it unto whom? The master of the wedding. The master of the wedding represents whom in that story? The creator of heaven and earth. The Father himself. And what did the master in that parable, in that story say? He was pleased. You think God will be pleased when he, Yeshua, gives the best unto him? Oh yeah, he's going to be pleased. So that story about being married where he's at the ceremony, we kind of look at it on an earthly basis, but it's telling us something. All right, we have to see a different picture than what we thought we saw, or we may think we saw. Now let's quickly go into 3:00 already. My. Okay. I'll see if I can't make a couple of comments about the red heifer. We understand that means. It means the cleaning, being set, or purification of something that's touching what? Something that's dead, especially a dead human being, the grave or the intent or a human being has been touched. And he wants that to be changed. Separation. Now, the fascinating thing I want to bring out, which he read, and I wanted you to kind of focus in on, I find it very, very fascinating. Verse 19th chapter, verse 12. And I'll try to get you to comments in here in a minute. And verse 12, and he shall purify himself on the third day. That's fascinating. Just a minute, Jeff. I want to bring that out. And the last part, he says, if he does not purify himself on the third day, he's going to wait for 7 more days. Now down in chapter 19, verse 19, he says, and that person shall sprinkle as unclean on the third day and on the seventh. So it's kind of two sprinklings here on two different directions. I find that very fascinating. When you talk about third day, what do you think of?
Messiah.
Messiah. Okay, one more question. I'm not going to tell you. Just want you to think about on the third day of, quote, creation, what took place? Land appeared and trees that bear fruit appeared. Jeff?
I just was going to say you don't have to stress too much about chapter 19 because you went over that in depth and it's the recordings on the website.
So. Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's still there about the red heifer. That's kind of neat. Okay, comments.
It's actually one of your greatest hits. It gets a lot of listens.
Yeah, good.
More so a question. That was for them then, with the elimination of the tabernacle. Is this still valid, or has this been put away as far as the washing after you've touched a dead person, the 3 days and the 7 days being washed?
That's correct. That is not done away with. It's been changed. And if you go online and pick up that recording, you got it written down on what I made a whole sermon on the red heifer. And that I think I did a very good job explaining that day. It's a real long one. I don't imagine probably 45 minutes explaining what the red heifer is all about and what happened when the book of Hebrews says even the red heifer now has been removed because death has been solved. Because on the third day, the Messiah rose from the dead and became a living being. So now he is definitely pure. Okay? And since he took that, because we can't take it, since he took that, and we follow suit with him, like in the book of Romans, in the 6th chapter, talks about, when we get baptized, it's not our baptism. We get baptized into his death. What happened 3 days later? Rised up from life. There was a purification. This is the reason why he says there, I think it's in John, I might be, you must be born of water and spirit. Purification first. And that's a purification of the red heifer. Purification first. Get submerged into that. Come out clean. Then you will go on to becoming spirit, which is life of self. You'll have life. In a nutshell, that's what I'm saying to you. But I recommend, if you can't get it, get online and find out what I said on that red heifer. It's quite a lengthy one, if I remember correctly.
It looks like there's another picture here, too, because it says, he who touches a dead body of anyone will be unclean. Before Messiah deals with us, we're all dead bodies. He purifies himself with water through the Messiah the third day, and on the seventh day come the resurrection, then he's clean. But if he doesn't purify himself with the Messiah during his life, then on the seventh day, you won't be clean.
You won't be clean.
You're not resurrected. You have to wait until the next one.
I guess you can put it that way. Yes. But he does say that if you don't do it, you are what? Cut off. That's not a good thing. Cut off is a really strong Hebrew phrase. You're done with. I'll have nothing to do with you. Goodbye. Oh, wow. God no longer talks with you. All right. In the book of Genesis, you remember a guy named Cain? All right. And he said, my punishment is more. That's not what the word in Hebrew says. My guilt is more than I can bear. That's what that word means in Hebrew. My guilt is more than I can bear. Well, that's good news. All right. This is the consequences, Cain. Out you go. All right. You will be a wandering person. You'll never have peace. You'll never have a place of safety anymore because you killed your brother. Now, your brother represents righteousness. You went out and you killed righteousness. You had nothing to anything do with that which is righteous before God. Therefore, I am through. You are cut off. All right? And sure enough, Cain was cut off, wasn't he? It's an awesome thing to think about. Any more comments? You know, there's so much to learn in these two chapters. I'm sorry, I don't have enough time to continue on, but go through and read it and picture it, and knowing that wonderful thing called separation of water in the old King James Version, and it calls it purification, and realize that when you quote, took on the baptism of the Messiah, you were taking on the purification of being dead. Because that's what you were. You were a walking dead person. Literally. Because Jesus said that in John, I think it's the third chapter or sixth chapter, he's talking to Nicodemus. And went on down. The famous statement is, yes, John 3:16. This is, what is it? God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. There was one woman here I told her, I said, this is awesome to my mind. It wasn't the Messiah that gave his life. It was a father who took his life. To do what? To prove to us that he loves this world. And he said, son, I'm going to kill you. And son says, take away from me. No. Take away from me. No. Third time. Take away from me. No. Die. And he did. 3 times he said that. Now it has to do also with the Day of Atonement, because there's 3 kinds of sins. There's sin, and there's transgression, and there's iniquity in Hebrew. But he took it all on. He actually bore the worst of the bunch, the iniquity part, as well as the sins and the transgressions. All right. Any more comments? This is my belief system. You know that. You don't have to believe what I believe. I'm just telling you what I think and what I see and understand in the Torah, what I see, a picture of the Messiah. And every time I look at things, I see more and more about the Messiah, more and more. Every time I read about law, every time I read about anything, I am surprised that it's there the Messiah is at every incident, including, we won't go through that today. One of these days I'll give a message about what's called the new moons and explain what that really means in Hebrew and what it clarifies and why it is the way it is. But right now is not the time. Yes?
Well, to me, you're just opening my eyes right and left, because I never would have put the marriage, changing the water into wine and taking it back to here where it's the high priest that gets the best of the best. And, you know, it's just really very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I see these things, but I don't really talk about it because it's like, oh, he's way off over here. He's got a tent. He's got a, you know. Well, I don't necessarily have it right, but I really see those things. I said, what a great picture. Because it's not, people don't look at, myself personally speaking, but they don't look at the actions that the Messiah did. We kind of look and say, you know, his mama gave him trouble, and his mama said, and he says, not my time yet, mama. What are you doing, woman? Oh, and we get that horrible negative thing. No. No, no. Wow, what a picture. And what did she do? She didn't say, oh, I'm sorry. You know what she said? Go get, bring the jugs of water over here. She knew exactly what he was going to do. I wonder how much she really understood. I think she understood a whole lot more than any woman that ever had been born or existed of what he was and what he represented. Now, that's my personal opinion. Everything. I mean, how could you not if you were in her shoes? You know? Wow.
Well, the circumstances of her pregnancy might have been a tip-off.